Let's consider the proposition that, quote, the march of the NFL into our homes has made professional football inseparable from the country's perception of itself. That's a big idea, and it seems to me kind of a generalization. But is the country's perception of itself so singular that we can characterize it that way? The Atlantic Monthly's Greg Easterbrook thinks so. Right, Greg?
Football is so popular because it's an athletic expression of the core dilemma that's faced the United States in the Cold War era, that is, how to use our incredible strength within a structure of rules. When you watch a football game, you're watching incredibly strong men try to figure out how to use their strength within a structure of rules.
Greg Easterbrook's most recent book is The Game's Not Over, subtitled In Defense of Football, and the book presents a defense of the NFL. What inclined you to think that pro football needed defending?
Well, we live in a polarized country. The standard analysis is that you're either for something or against it. Some saying the game is fine, leave it alone. Others saying the game is terrible, it should be outlawed. The middle position of the game is great, but it needs to be reformed has not been well enunciated.
In fact, the subtitle of the book is a little bit misleading, I think. You don't defend tackle football as played by children. Why not?
The NFL is played by grown men who knowingly assume a risk in return for a great reward. At the youth level especially, there's only risk. Pediatric studies are increasingly showing that the immature brain and neck that aren't finished forming yet are much more vulnerable to neurological risk than a grown man's brain and neck are. We have probably as many as 2 million boys and a few girls playing tackle football in full pads, and it's crazy. You can be against that and want that to end and still think that the NFL is basically great and that college football is good as it's played but needs reform so it doesn't detract from education.
But given what we've learned over the last few years about brain injury in football, aren't there several thousand former NFL players who would argue with you about those life and death consequences?
Well, Centers for Disease Control has studied retired NFL players and found that as a group, they live longer, they have fewer heart attacks, fewer strokes, and they are less likely to commit suicide than men of the same birth year. Now, we know of a few spectacular and awful, tragic exceptions to that rule. But as a group, retired NFL players in later life are in pretty good shape. One reason I make the distinction that I make about youth football is that health studies, including some done at Boston University in your backyard, show that retired NFL players who began playing tackle football in pads before the age 12 are the ones that show long-term neurological decline. The ones who didn't start to play until they were in middle school show no more neurological decline than other men of the same birth year.
It's striking, I think, that you maintain that the quality of play in the NFL, I'm quoting again here, has never been higher. That does not seem to be what anybody else is saying about today's pro game. It's really under attack for exactly that reason, isn't it?
It's common to make golden age arguments. Oh, everything was so great in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think when people make golden age arguments about football, they forget how boring some of those 1970s games were. Low scoring, very little offense. In the last decade, as scoring has increased, I think the quality of play is fantastic.
There are aspects of the NFL that you criticize in the book. You describe Commissioner Roger Goodell as a latter-day viceroy, which I thought was particularly good. You deplore the way billionaire owners are subsidized by taxpayers, including, of course, taxpayers who have no interest at all in football. How would you go about reforming that aspect of the league?
Well, the estimate I use is about $1 billion a year for stadiums goes from taxpayers to the billionaire ownership class of the NFL. I consider that an outrage. Mm-hmm. The ideal solution would be for politicians to develop some spine and stop making giveaways to NFL owners. But the world may end before politicians develop some spine. So the very practical solution to this is for Congress to change copyright laws so that events that are conducted in publicly funded facilities cannot be copyrighted. And if that were to happen, the NFL, on the day that law passed, would repay all subsidies that it had ever received and never ask for another subsidy again because the ability to copyright its images is the essence of its revenue.
All right. We have discussed a few of the specific points in The Game's Not Over. Let's return to what seems to me to be your central theme, which you restate at the end of the book as follows. The question of America's proper role in the world will be with us for generations, and is reflected in the king of sports, the king of sports, of course, being football. What does reflected mean in that context?
We see in its craziness and noise and expense and elaborateness things that we care about in our own society. The reason the Ray Rice video became such a sensation of him, his punching his then-fiancée, is because we knew it was the reflection of the domestic violence problem that America wasn't facing. Football is the American national sport because it's what America is. Too complicated, too expensive, too loud, too aggressive, and you can't take your eyes off it.
Greg Easterbrook's most recent book is The Game's Not Over. Greg, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Happy to be here, Bill.